Arizona was prepared for an unusual election in 2020. In the midst of a global pandemic, more Arizona voters planned to cast ballots by mail, even as then-President Trump bellowed that absentee voting was beset by fraud. A month before the election, Arizona Secretary of State Democrat Katie Hobbs told us how her office was working hard to ensure confidence in the state's election and results.
There are many systems in place to ensure that voters only get to vote once. If somebody decides not to wait for their ballot by mail and they go to an early voting place to vote in person, their ballot by mail is canceled. They can cast a regular ballot in the polling place. If somebody has already returned their mail-in ballot and they go to a polling place to try to vote, they'll be given a provisional ballot. So there's a lot of checks in place to make sure the system works right.
A record 4.2 million Arizonans registered to vote and 3.4 million cast their ballots in 2020, a turnout of 79.9%. Republican Governor Doug Ducey defended the state's election systems in a Twitter spat with President Trump in late November. Trump writing, quote, "Who needs Democrats when you have Republicans like Doug Ducey?" And Ducey responding, "I've been pretty outspoken about Arizona's election system quite a bit, including in the Oval Office." He said it again on the day Arizona certified its election results.
As I've said before, we do elections well here in Arizona. The system is strong, and that's why I've bragged on it so much.
But even as Arizona's Republican governor said his state does elections well, members of his party challenged Arizona's results. State GOP Chair Kelly Ward talked about why they filed lawsuits to overturn Joe Biden's win.
They're trying to say that Republicans, not just here in Arizona, but across the country, are trying to take an election from Joe Biden. That is in no way, shape, or form true. We are trying to have integrity in our electoral process, and we will have it. And we have every right to make legal challenges all the way up until the next president, I think it's going to be Donald Trump, is inaugurated on January 20th.
Ward and the state Republican Party lost their court attempts to overturn the results of the 2020 election. In fact, earlier this month, they had to pay the state of Arizona $18,000 in attorney's fees for suing the wrong government officials in some of their suits. Now, Republicans in Arizona's state legislature are advancing a package of bills to reform the election system that just months ago, both Democratic and Republican leaders, like the governor, applauded. Republican State Senator Michelle Ugenti-Rita says she doesn't believe past successes for the state's voting systems predict future security.
You want to have a voting system that encourages participation, that's relatively, you know, easy to participate in, that's convenient. But we don't want that to be at the expense of the other priorities, election security, timely results, you know, the administering a system fairly, equal application of the law. So you have to have all of these things, like I said, working harmoniously together.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point, and today we're going to take a look at the right to vote in Arizona and how struggles over the ballot box there reflect efforts in Republican-led legislatures nationwide. And let's start in Phoenix with Jeremy Duda, politics reporter for the Arizona Mirror. Jeremy, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna.
And also with us is Jack Beattie, On Point news analyst. Hello there, Jack.
Hello, Meghna. Hello, Jeremy.
So, Jeremy, let's start. Give me a big picture sense of how many bills right now are pending in the Arizona legislature that have to do with voting.
There are a number of bills that have to do with voting or the election system in general. But in terms of legislation that folks are concerned would restrict voting rights or kind of suppress voting or anything like that, we're down to really just a couple of bills that are really getting some notice. We got a lot of attention, I think, early in the legislative session for probably a record number of bills that would have done so, and most of those died fairly quietly. And some, you know, some fairly wild stuff about early voting, but we have one that would kind of purge the early voting list that would Sorry about that.
It's quite all right. Look, I am right there with you, Jeremy. I'm feeling every moment of this. So don't worry. Don't worry. If you need to take care of something, go ahead.
No problem.
Okay.
No.
So you want to keep going?
Better now. We have a bill that would purge the early voting list. Folks who have not used their early ballots in two straight election cycles. Arizona was actually kind of a pioneer in no excuse early voting. And since, I think, 2007 or 2008, we've had a list where you can sign up for a list as a voter, and every election they will automatically send you an early ballot. You can send it back, drop it off, do whatever you want with it. A bill that would, if you don't use it for two straight election cycles in either the primary election or general election, they would actually send you a card asking if you still want to be on that list. If you don't respond, they'll take your name off of that. That would affect, I think, a couple hundred thousand voters. And the other bill that is still going in the legislature and looks like it's probably poised for passage would require more information from voters who do vote early, more proof of ID. The way voters, the way they verify the identity of voters who vote early right now is you sign the envelope that the ballot goes into. They compare election workers who've been trained in signature verification. They compare that to signatures that are on file for that voter and use that to determine whether it's a match. If it is, the ballot's counted. If not, they contact the voter and find out. This bill would require you to put your driver's license number or number from some sort of other form of identification in the ballot as well. And there's a lot of concern that that would lead to, you know, a lot of ballots not getting counted.
Right, but not all forms of identification would be acceptable, right? I'm seeing here that maybe tribal ID would not be allowed.
I believe that would be. I'm not sure. I know driver's license, state IDs, voter identification cards. There's a number of forms of identification that would be permitted.
Okay. Now, regarding the bill that proposes removing voters who haven't voted in a couple of elections, removing them from the permanent early voting list, just to underscore your point, I'm seeing that that could have an impact if passed on some 200,000 Arizona voters out of a list of slightly more than 3 million voters who are on those automatic mail-in ballot lists.
Yeah, thereabouts. Yeah, about 200,000 voters, I believe.
Okay,
is the number that election officials have cited.
Got it. Okay, so Jack Beatty, let me just turn to you briefly. Sort of what do you see here in this smaller but still potentially very impactful suite of bills being considered in Arizona?
Well, they fit a trend, don't they? And the trend is sort of the opposite of the Louis Brandeis comment. He famously called states the laboratories of democracy. Well, from Georgia to Iowa to Arizona, all over the country, Republican-led states are laboratories now of anti-democracy. Indeed, the authors of How Democracies Fail call them laboratories of authoritarianism. These states are trying by ways petty and profound to keep the electorate such that they can win. And they are not hiding it. There's a bluntness about the intention. Arizona, there was an Arizona case earlier this month in the Supreme Court asking some restrictions that had applied earlier. And Judge Barrett asked the lawyer for Arizona, well, why do you want to prevent, votes that were cast in the wrong precinct? Why do you want those not counted? And he put it bluntly, because it puts us at a competitive disadvantage to the Democrats. No highfalutin talk about the integrity of the ballot and what we heard from Ms. Ward a few minutes ago. No, bluntly, this is about our political survival. And this is a dangerous trend is to understate it. The question is, how far will it go? Will this, in fact, be the wave of the future, a kind of the Republicans can't win on issues, so they are tailoring the electorate such that they can win?
Well, we're going to speak with an Arizona Republican member of the legislature there in a few minutes. But Jeremy, I didn't know if you wanted to respond to that, because I'm also wondering what members of the Arizona Republican Party are telling you about why they think that these bills are needed, especially so soon after a highly successful election in the state just 4 months ago.
Well, what you hear, I mean, obviously you hear the standard line of election integrity, needing to secure the election. What you don't hear is any evidence that there's a problem that needs to be fixed in the first place. And, you know, with respect to the early ballot bill that would require more proof of ID, for example. Now, last year we heard President Trump, of course, telling people that they shouldn't trust voting by mail, that it was a very not secure system. That is, if you talk to any election official who runs a system like this, they'll tell you that is just patently false. This is a very secure system. You see very few instances of fraud or malfeasance or anything like that. You know, last year when the president said that, I spoke with our attorney general's office out here, and at least going back a decade, they'd never seen a single case involving someone who had been accused of, you know, signing someone else's envelope. So you hear, so for all that you hear about the need to defend the integrity of the election, we never really hear examples of why that integrity needs to be strengthened. What you also hear a lot, at least this session, at least this year, since the 2020 election, is lawmakers saying, well, I get so many emails and calls from constituents who are so concerned. They don't believe the election system is secure. They believe something happened in November. And it seems like that's a problem because I think, as most of us know, all these allegations we've heard from the 2020 election, there's never been any evidence to back any of them up. And rather than say, well, we don't need to secure the system because there's no indication that anything bad happened in the first place with the November election, and they say, well, we need to kind of reassure people about the integrity of the election. And then you end up passing these laws that kind of chip away at voter access or make it less likely that folks are going to cast ballots or have their ballots counted.
Right. So, I mean, but it is true that fears about the about election integrity are being fomented wildly through things like social media. So it makes you wonder if perhaps a more effective way would be to actually do something about the sources of that fear. Now, listen, we're going to take a quick break here and go even in more depth into what's happening there in Arizona. And just as a note, we also spoke in advance of the show with Tori Dolan, a fellow at Arizona State University, who told us that native ID cards would not be acceptable forms of ID under one of the bills in consideration in Arizona. And also just facts, an analysis of two elections where 14.6 million votes were cast by mail found only 300 possible cases of double voting. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this hour we are taking a close look at proposed changes to the voting system in Arizona and trying to understand how what's being proposed in Arizona fits into larger efforts in Republican-led legislatures across the country. I'm joined today by Jeremy Duda, politics reporter at the Arizona Mirror. He's with us from Phoenix. Jack Beatty is also with us as well. He's On Point's news analyst. And joining us now is Randy Perez, program director for the Voting Rights Lab, which advocates for voting rights at the state level. And he joins us as well from Phoenix. Randy, welcome to On Point.
Meghna, thanks for having me.
And also just to note that we are expecting to hear as well from a Republican state senator. And in fact, I hear that she is joining us now. So joining us from Scottsdale is Senator Michelle Ugenti-Rita. Senator, welcome to you.
Thank you so much.
So first of all, Senator, let me just start with you. You are the sponsor of SB 1069 there. That is the one that would remove voters from Arizona's permanent early voting list if they fail to vote in primary and general elections in two consecutive election cycles. That's the sort of the nut of it. What is the bill hoping to accomplish?
Well, thank you for the question. It's real simple. We just want to make sure that those individuals on our early voting list are really made up of individuals utilizing the voluntary program. So this is a program in Arizona that you can register for. And what will happen is we'll send you a ballot every election cycle. It's just great. I vote by mail myself. I have voted both ways, but right now I vote by mail. But, you know, we want to make sure, though, that if you're on it, you're utilizing it. There's a cost associated with sending it. And we don't want to send, we the state don't want to send a bunch of ballots out to people who aren't voting by mail. So this is an effort to kind of clean it up, if you will, and make sure that, again, those who are on the list are participants of our vote by mail program.
Mm. I wonder, though, so the right to vote is a right, and perhaps that right and ensuring that right might actually come with a little bit of dollar cost. I mean, perhaps is it not worth that dollar cost to the state to be sure that everyone has access to the ballot box?
Sure, but I think you've conflated some things here. This has nothing to do with your voter registration. So you, of course, continue to have access to the ballot box. If you are removed under the scenario of you've missed four consecutive elections, you don't respond to a notice asking you to reaffirm your participation, you can still vote in person early. You can vote in person day of. So that won't be interfered with. And, of course, you could re-register for the program if you wanted to. You don't necessarily have a right to be on a list to get your ballot early. And that's the only thing this bill is addressing.
Mm. Randy Perez, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think just to start, the senator said something very interesting, which was the early voter list. But here in Arizona, we have what is called the permanent early voter list. And permanent means lasting or intended to last or remain unchanged indefinitely. So the act of kicking up to 200,000 folks off this list and denying them the opportunity to receive a ballot by mail is a threat to all 3 million folks in the state of Arizona that currently vote by mail. You know, we have estimates on this bill that it has a disproportionate racial impact, particularly on the Latinx community here in Arizona. We've seen Latinx turnout in the last 10 years since SB 1070 in 2010 double while we expanded the electorate. And this is a direct attack on my community. You know, we have an estimate that between 25 to 50,000 Latinos could be impacted by this bill, which represents 4 to 7% of all Latino registered voters in the state of Arizona. So SB 1485 is not only unnecessary, it is playing at the margins of elections that Republicans continue to lose as demographics change and our community becomes more engaged. You know, Joe Biden only won this state by about 10,000 votes. Suddenly 200,000 ballots are not going out. You might have a different result. And I think that's what the Republican Party wants.
Senator, go ahead. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, Mr. Perez often likes to speak for other people and impugn their motivations with no facts or proof. So he can continue to do that. I don't think that resonates with anyone. But this bill applies to all voters. It's a real simple cleanup. There are other states that do this. California does it. It's a different time frame, but they do it as well. So this isn't anything other than making sure that our very popular vote-by-mail program has integrity and is made up of those who want to participate in it. And I think that's why the opposition is struggling to grow their groundswell against the bill, because once you explain the actual plain language of it, it looks reasonable, comes across sincere. And it's and really, if you're voting by mail, it's not going to affect you. If you're a casual vote by mail voter, look, you're not going to see a difference, because you're going to continue to get your ballot mailed to you. If you haven't voted by mail in a minimum of 4 years, but potentially even longer, you're really not going to notice anything anyway, because you haven't been voting by mail. And then in the scenario, as long as you respond to the notice every 4 years, you'll continue to get your ballot by mail. So once the voter kind of understands, like I said, the plain language of the bill, they think it's appropriate and they understand.
Well, Senator, if I might ask you, I am mindful of the fact that Arizona just had a highly successful election in 2020 under very difficult circumstances. And honestly, the state's elections officials should be applauded for that. But I am wondering when, you know, bills usually both at the state and federal level, when they are proposed, they're designed to solve a problem, right? And that's why the bill exists. And I'm still not quite clear what the problem is that your bill is designed to solve.
I think we kind of covered it. Look, Mr. Perez kind of alluded to it. There are people who are being sent ballots who aren't utilizing the system. In what other scenario are you just registered for something in perpetuity without using it, even at the most casual level?
I mean, I've had a driver's license for all my adult life, and for the past 20 years, haven't driven a car.
And it expires. There's different expiration dates depending on what state you're in. But look, we have an obligation to make sure that our elections are run smoothly, timely. You know, the ballots aren't just being sent everywhere and to anyone if they're not participating. And we have a responsibility to make sure people who are participating, and again, in our very popular system, continue to want to do so and trust it. So this is something that, like I said, other states have. And really, when you get down to the actual language, it really doesn't look like anything other than what it is, a cleanup provision to make sure that our mail-in system runs smoothly.
So, Randy Perez, respond to the senator's assertion, and it's true that similar things happen in other states. So, I mean, where's the problem in that?
No, absolutely. And as usual, I admire the senator's commitment to making sure that folks are not voting in the state of Arizona. Look, I mean, if you think about the fact that we have failed 200,000 folks who have been getting ballots for multiple consecutive cycles and not turned them in, this is a question of values, right? I look at that and I say, how can we make sure that 200,000 folks are actually engaged in our system? Just because a state like California, which is an easy target for the senator, is doing something doesn't make it right. In fact, it's usually don't California my Arizona, and now you want to move policy that is apparently straight from California. So you think about this and you think about how folks need to be educated and engaged in our system. There's no need for this. The senator's kind of dancing around the fact that all of these bills are predicated on this big lie about the 2020 election. We've seen an onslaught of bills, as Jeremy alluded to earlier. And you cannot legislate based on conspiracies and myths and lies about our elections. You can't look at this bill in a silo. Not only do we want to kick off 200,000 folks from the permanent early voter list and end the permanent early voter list and just call it the early voter list, we want to add more onerous ID requirements. We already have some of the strictest voter ID in the entire country. You know, we have millions of eligible voters who are not being engaged. So this is a major, major problem for our communities.
Senator, I'm going to come back to you in just a second. But Jeremy Duda, let me turn back to you here as as the politics reporter at the Arizona Mirror. Do you have a sense about, you know, sort of what sentiment is statewide regarding some of these proposals? The senator talked about, I mean, she says that there's a lot of support statewide. Is that right?
It's hard to say. I haven't seen any point on it or really spoken with folks statewide. I hear you hear a lot about the from the political advocates at the Capitol and advocacy groups and stuff like that. So it's kind of hard to say in terms of what kind of support we see. We know that the early voting system in general has a tremendous amount of support statewide, that 80% plus of voters in Arizona use that in some form or another, either mailing their ballots or dropping that off. In terms of the actual changes, I think that's a little harder to say. Mm. I would imagine that the stricter proof of ID requirements probably would rankle folks a little bit. We have a very system that's extremely easy to use, and this would make it a bit more difficult. In terms of the other bill, the permanent early voter list bill, that I think would probably be a little harder to say.
Mm. Well, Senator Ugenti Rita, you did say a couple of times about trying to increase confidence in the integrity of the election system in Arizona, and I would say that you're right. There is wavering confidence amongst people, not just in Arizona, but across the country. I'm wondering what you think the source of that lack of confidence is. What's causing people to mistakenly believe that their election systems are not actually run with integrity now?
Well, it's hard to know. Perhaps just because I don't like to speak for other people, but probably a combination of things. One, a lot of misinformation coming from media outlets, perhaps their own experience when voting. And so it's probably a combination of multiple inputs. And look, this is something where the stakes are high and the outcomes matter. So people naturally and rightfully so should be watching it diligently and getting engaged. I am all for promoting our process and making sure people feel like they can vote and have confidence in the outcome. So I think because naturally the stakes are high, that you know, just the littlest thing can tip the scale when it comes to someone's belief regarding, you know, if something's run well or efficient. And we have, you know, and look, we run elections here in the state of Arizona, and we set the laws, and we want to make sure all voters, no matter your party affiliation, all voters feel confident in the outcomes, that we have timely results, and we encourage participation.
Yeah, I mean, I ask that question because there are efforts going on through bills like yours in Arizona and other states to fix a problem that might not actually exist, but it's not taking care of the real problem, which, as you're pointing out, is lack of confidence. And you said there's all sorts of little things that might go into contributing to that lack of confidence. I'm going to offer an example. Here's one of those little things.
If elected, I promise.
And then McSally.
Remember last fall when every TV ad was from a politician?
Vote against.
Now, Democrats want taxpayer-funded political ads. Senate Bill 1 is a disaster. Democrats also want to register illegal aliens and let people vote without ID. That means fraud. It's a partisan power grab, and it's wrong. Tell Senator Kelly and Senator Sinema, vote against S1.
Paid for by Heritage Action for America.
So that is from Heritage Action for America, the advocacy arm of the Conservative Heritage Foundation. The ad, as you heard, targeting Democratic Senators Mark Kelly and Kristen Sinema of Arizona, encouraging them to vote against the Democratic-backed voting bill S-1 in the United States Senate. And Senator Ugenti Rita, I just wonder, in terms of the fomenting of lack of confidence in the voting system, I do think it's fair to say that is predominantly coming from the Republican Party, from advocacy groups associated with the Republican Party. There's an endless drumbeat both on television and social media, mailers, Fox News, et cetera, that's just sort of pouring into people's heads this concept that they cannot trust the election system. And so given that, is there not something that the Arizona legislature could do to get at that fundamental problem rather than adjusting the system that that changes people's access to things like mail-in ballots?
Well, it doesn't change their access. Remember, these people already aren't voting by mail. But I think you just make a lot of assumptions, so it's kind of hard to deconstruct your question there. I don't know that it's Republicans doing something. Let's be honest. You know, Democrats want in a very relaxed, kind of loose process. And I don't think that that aligns with voters. I don't think that aligns with Democrat voters, to be honest, because there's eligibility requirements to vote. Very, very minimal, but they're important. And we have to do something to make sure those eligibility requirements are met. I think that's bipartisan. I think both people in both camps would acknowledge that. And so you have to have laws on the books to make sure eligibility requirements are met. And that isn't doing anything other than reinforcing our system. So I have to respectfully kind of disagree with the characterization of the issue.
Randy Perez, do you want to respond?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to go back to the ad that you played, because I think that ad was, unfortunately, while it's definitely hard to hear, you know, our community here in Arizona referred to as illegal aliens that are trying to register to vote. That's the old Sheriff Joe Arpaio playbook and Russell Pierce. You know, I think the senator had an opportunity to push back on that, right? But he didn't take it. I mean, this entire voter fraud narrative has always been rooted deeply, deeply in white supremacy, and that certain populations should not be participating in our elections. I think it's really hard. I mean, the Heritage Group and what they're trying to do around HR1 and fomenting this discontent is an example of what the Republican Party's been doing for the last year or longer. by sowing distrust in our elections. Now you have this lack of confidence in our election system because it has become a convenient political ploy, a fundraising technique, a political tactic for the right that they're not going to let go of. I'm deeply afraid of where the Republican Party is going, that now their singular organizing principle is that our folks should be voting and your folks should not. Mm-hmm. That is not how a functioning democracy is ever going to work. I think it's really, really difficult for folks across the state of Arizona to hear that this is what's going on in our state legislature. These bills do not have support. The senator failed to mention that her bill, SB 1069, failed with a Republican voting against it in the Senate first before she had to go back and do it again and bring it to the House, where I expect it to fail in the House, along with a lot of these other measures that Governor Ducey has said, as was played earlier, that our election system works here in Arizona. And folks don't want this. Folks want to focus on things that matter to them and their family, the economy, COVID, healthcare, all of
that. Yeah, well, I'm afraid with that, we're going to have to take a quick break. So Randy Perez, Program Director with the Voting Rights Lab in Phoenix, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And Senator Michelle Ugenti Rita in Scottsdale, Arizona. Senator, thank you so much for joining us as well.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
We'll be right back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The end of this week, we're going to actually talk about some really good news, that new research is showing that folks who are 50 and older, even during the extreme challenges of this pandemic, many of them tended to be happier. So older listeners, I'm like so close to that line. Maybe I shouldn't even say that. But folks listening who are 50 plus want to hear from you and your stories, sort of like how you managed through this pandemic. And more importantly, do you feel like the passage of time has given you, has equipped you with a kind of wisdom that has actually led you to feeling happier? So what do you wish you could tell your younger self or younger people you know in your life? Give us a call at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for Friday's show. Today, we are taking a close look at bills pending in the Arizona State Legislature that would change access to the ballot box in Arizona. And I'm joined today by Jack Beatty, On Point News Analyst. Jeremy Duda is with us as well, a politics reporter at the Arizona Mirror. He's with us from Phoenix. And Jeremy, I know I was supposed to let you go at the last break, but it was a pretty interesting conversation there between Senator Michelle Ugenti Rita and Randy Perez. And I wanted to just ask you one last question to sort of ground us once again in the state legislature there. Based on, you know, your conversations with lawmakers in the state, what do you think the likelihood is of some of these bills passing there?
Well, the two bills that we discussed, I think, have a pretty good chance of passage. If you look at our legislature, the Republicans have actually the narrowest majorities they've had since they took control of the legislature in the 1960s. They have just one vote in both the House and the Senate. They can't afford to lose a single vote. As Mr. Perez mentioned, that initially defeated Senator Ugenti Rita's bill on the permanent early voter list. Another bill came back, and this one senator who kind of defected came back into the fold, voted for it. It still has to go to the full House, but I have no reason to believe it won't pass. The bigger question is what will happen when it gets to Governor Doug Ducey, who, as we've mentioned, has repeatedly said throughout last year including in an in-person conversation with President Trump in the Oval Office, constantly boasts about our election system, says it makes it easy to vote and hard to cheat. That would certainly indicate that he feels like the elections are secure enough. He has said lately to myself and other reporters that he may be open to signing some of this legislation. He hasn't really indicated which bill or both or whether there's others, but that will be kind of the moment of truth. We'll see if Governor Ducey believes that he does need to make it, quote unquote, harder to cheat here.
Okay, so one more thing before I let you go, because one thing we haven't really discussed is you just hinted at it, Jeremy, about actually maybe how the Arizona electorate itself is changing, which made it such an important state in the last presidential election as well. So we spoke with Tory Dolan, a lawyer and native vote law fellow at Arizona State University's Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. And in her eyes, the pending legislation does not take into account the lived experiences of all Arizonans.
The person in Scottsdale who walks to the end of their driveway to get their ballot from their mailbox, votes at their kitchen table, and drives it somewhere to drop it off, that's not the person that's going to be the most impacted. I think about the Havasupai tribe that lives at the base of the Grand Canyon. I think of people who live in Hogans on the Navajo Nation who don't have electricity or running water or broadband. And, kind of consistently, we see that the legislature, at least from my perspective and watching these committee hearings, is that they have a lot of assumptions about the way people live in Arizona that just does not reflect the entirety of Arizona.
She also talked to us about her concerns regarding Arizona Bill 1713, that one about voter ID. And she anticipates that the bill could have a disproportionate impact on indigenous voters because many do not have driver's license. And the bill stipulates that voters must also be able to, must write their birthday correctly.
For most folks, no big deal. Everybody knows their birthday. But there are a lot of indigenous people here in Arizona that have delayed birth certificates because they were born at home. And when you get a delayed birth certificate, they kind of just guess a birthday for you. So it's not uncommon for Indigenous people to not know their birthday, especially if it was just randomly assigned to them.
So Jeremy, last question for you here. What's important for us to understand regarding, the Arizona electorate and if and how it's has been changing that makes these discussions that much more pressing in the state right now?
Well, certainly we have seen what appear to be some changes in the electorate over the last few election cycles. It certainly seemed to have, I think, Republicans kind of spooked. The GOP has been this has been a solidly red state for a long time, for pretty much most of my life and going back even years before that. Starting in 2016, we really saw some change. We saw Democrats winning countywide races in Maricopa County, which is the largest county in Arizona, traditional Republican stronghold. We saw Democrats win statewide races in 2018, including one of our U.S. Senate seats. And then last year, of course, we saw Joe Biden was the first Democrat to win Arizona since 1996. We have a second Democrat winning the other Senate seat here. That's the first time since the early 1950s that Democrats have controlled both Senate seats here. So you really do see. For years, we've been hearing predictions of demographic changes, kind of changing Arizona from a red state to a purple state or a blue state, and for years, you saw those predictions without not come to fruition, and now it seems we may be seeing some of those actual changes that have been predicted for a long time. And I think certainly that is plays a role in kind of driving the conversation on election law changes here.
Well, Jeremy Duda, politics reporter at the Arizona Mirror, with us from Phoenix. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Jack. Let's pull the focus out more nationally. I mean, what have you been hearing over the course of this hour that reflects on this sort of national discussion regarding Republican-led legislatures across the country seeking to make changes to voting laws?
Well, it's the fallout, isn't it, from the big lie? I mean, the president spent months and weeks after he lost the election saying it was rigged. And that created a crisis in public confidence. Polls show that among Republican voters. And so to deal with this crisis of public confidence based upon a big lie, real things are going to be changed in the world that will make it possible for Republicans to win. In other words, complaints about rigging the election are going to result in measures that help to rig the election for the GOP. It is an appalling moment for truth in American politics. There is no, as you pointed out with that statistic, there is no voter fraud anywhere. In fact, Trump's own attorney general could find none. His man in the cybersecurity expert, most secure election we've ever had. The facts don't matter. The big lie is the controlling paradigm in the Republican Party, and the whole country now, its democracy is hostage to that lie.
Well, let's turn now to Bertrall Ross, Chancellor's Professor of Law at the University of California, Berkeley School of Law. He joined us many times in 2020 to sort of give us advance notice of concerns around elections that we should be paying close attention to. So, Professor Ross, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks, Megna. Good to be here with you all, as always.
So you've been hearing a lot over the course of this hour. I'm just, first of all, I want to start with a quick nuts and bolts question to you. My understanding is that state legislatures, especially after the recent Supreme Court cases regarding the Voting Rights Act, actually have quite a bit of latitude in terms of enacting voter restrictions within their state. Is that true?
Yes, that's absolutely right. And I just kind of want to point to something that Senator Eugene P. Rita said, which gives the states quite a bit of latitude. She described the bill in Arizona as looking reasonable and coming across as sincere. And I think that, you know, that is precisely the challenge to those who seek to overturn these laws in court. These laws are not the old Jim Crow laws in the sense that they intentionally target communities of color in the bigoted and prejudiced ways of the past. Instead, they're a little bit more subtle. They seem reasonable. They look sincere. They're not directly targeting particular communities, but they are making it more difficult to vote. And that difficulty is having a disparate impact on communities of color. The problem, though, with voting law, and particularly the Constitution and the Voting Rights Act as interpreted by the Supreme Court, is that these laws do not subject to invalidation, or the Constitution and the law does not subject to invalidation those voting restrictions that merely have a disparate impact. Instead, you have to prove something more. What more you have to prove is still up for question, and the court will decide that by the end of this term. But that's what makes it particularly challenging with respect to targeting these laws for invalidation under the Constitution or the Voting Rights Act.
So, Jack, remind us here, because I rely on your deep historical knowledge about, I mentioned the Voting Rights Act. Wasn't Arizona one of the states that actually fell under the purview of the federal government for a while in terms of having to guarantee that they were running free and fair elections?
Yes, starting in the 1970s. And this because for 60 years prior to that, Arizona had a severe literacy test. And in fact, of course, the famous Arizonan, William Rehnquist, who became the Chief Justice as a young man, participated in harassing voters in line, minority voters, to get them to read the Constitution, to test to see whether they could read. So, yes, it had a very shameful history. There are counties in other states, here in New Hampshire, for example, and in Manhattan, even, there are counties that had pre-clearance provisions. But Arizona, I believe, is the only non-Southern state to fall under that rubric.
So thank you for that, Jack, because, I mean, there's a line to be drawn across history to where we are now. And Professor Ross, is this one of the inevitable outcomes to, I mean, I mentioned the Supreme Court, that the Shelby County decision?
Yeah, absolutely. Excuse me. Sorry. Absolutely. And, you know, what Shelby County did was render ineffective the Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which had a requirement that certain covered states with a history of discrimination obtain pre-approval for voting changes from the Attorney General or the District of Columbia or the District Court for the District of Columbia. And the reason for doing so is because prior to the Voting Rights Act, you would see states engage in these manipulative voting practices designed to deny the vote to minority communities. And it was so challenging to challenge these pieces of legislation through constant court actions as new ones would reappear and all of the progress that would be made with respect to litigation would go away. And so the preclearance provision was designed to counter that effect, and Arizona was one of the covered states. And so what the court did in Shelby County was to render that preclearance provision ineffective. And Justice Ginsburg had an important line in that case in her dissent. And what she said in her dissent is that throwing out preclearance when it has worked and is continuing to work to stop discriminatory changes in election laws and practices is like throwing away your umbrella in a rainstorm because you're getting wet. And right now we're getting wet because many of those covered jurisdictions that have a history of discrimination are now enacting new and innovative laws that ultimately have a harmful and disparate impact on the voting of communities of color.
You know, I'm reminded of something Jack said earlier in the hour when he mentioned Justice Brandeis talking about states being the laboratories of democracy, not the laboratories of democratic democracy or Republican democracy, but democracy, period. It is not clear to me that, you know, any of these voting bills wouldn't have an impact on Republican voters as well, Professor Ross.
I think that that's absolutely right. And one of the things that I think that Republicans have been short-sighted about is that they're focusing a lot on the 2020 election, which was a unique election, idiosyncratic election in a pandemic. And what we had in the pandemic were those individuals who tended to vote Democrat were more concerned about their health in the context of a pandemic than those who tended to vote Republican. And as a result, they tended to rely on absentee voting and other tools that would keep them in a more safe position in the context of an election in the pandemic. But in the past, we haven't seen this partisan disparity in who votes via absentee. And in fact, what you might see is that these very restrictions that are being enacted may have the negative effect that the Republicans don't anticipate harming their voters who, before the pandemic election, tended to vote absentee in equal numbers with Democratic voters. And to the extent that Republicans are seeking to reach out to those voters who are more on the margin, working class and lower income voters, those voters are going to be particularly harmed by these restrictions.
But Jack, it seems a risk that Republican state legislatures across the country are willing to take.
It does, and it really mirrors practices in the Jim Crow era. I mean, I could quote to you Carter Glass, a famous senator from Virginia, who said, well, you know, these literacy tests, they're going to keep blacks out of the electorate, but also the uneducated whites. We want people to cast an informed vote. There's a fellow out there in Arizona, one of their John Kavanaugh, state rep. He says, quantity is important, but we have to look at the quality of votes as well. Carter Glass couldn't agree more. The Jim Crow era one joins hands with Jim Crow two.
Professor Ross, we've got a minute to go. Do you think there is these bills are evidence of an animosity towards democracy? And if so, what is the democratic, small d democratic response to that? What is the civic response to that animosity? Should it be? What should it be?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's animosity towards democracy or the future of our multiracial democracy because of the potential threat it poses to the Republican Party. And so the response has to be a counter-mobilization campaign that is designed to distribute and share information about what's going on and try to counter the misinformation. But more importantly, during these next elections, to use these voter restrictions as a tool to mobilize people to defend their democracy. And I think that if you do that, then the folks will be elected to office that will recognize that protecting democracy has to be one of their primary obligations as office holders.
Well, Bertral Ross, Chancellor's Professor of Law at the University of California, Berkeley School of Law. Thank you, as always, Professor Ross.
Thank you for having me.
And Jack Beatty, On Point News Analyst with us from Hanover, New Hampshire. Jack, great pleasure to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Megna.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.